right. It's been an interesting night so far. Caught off guard a little bit by our first couple of hours. I want to change what we wrote in the description of our first guest tonight, because on the website, we described him as somebody who had survived through schizophrenia, but now he says he's not. He said, in fact, that's a false diagnosis imposed upon him to control him for being mentally aware of what's really going on. So I think we got to go back and kind of retool how we looked at what we just experienced on the air. And maybe what he was saying about psychiatry is the place we ought to start next with Dr. Judith Orloff, who is a very well-respected teacher and writer, and somebody who has sort of specialized in alternative views on psychiatry. And we'll talk a little bit about psychic psychiatry coming up next, too, on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Dr. Judith Orloff has been on with us before on Coast to Coast when we were talking about psychic vampirism, energy vampirism years ago. Really enjoyed that conversation with you then, and it's always nice to look up and see you on TV or gracing some national magazine, which I know you do a lot of. Nice to hear from you again.
Oh, well, it's great to be back on the show.
As an assistant clinical professor of psychiatry at UCLA and as an author where you write a lot about emotional and mental issues, can I ask you, without getting into feeling like you're giving any specific diagnosis about the last guest we had, what do you hear in that conversation we just had about him renouncing his, Will Elliott renouncing his autobiography, in which he talked about coming to terms with schizophrenia and overcoming it and renouncing that and saying now, no, he was wrong all along. And schizophrenia is a diagnosis that's imposed upon him by the gatekeepers of reality. That is to say, people like you, psychiatrists.
Well, I found the discussion extremely interesting. I'm a psychiatrist. I'm also an intuitive. So what I do is I combine traditional psychiatry with intuition and an appreciation of spiritual realms and alternate realities. And so what I wanted to do, particularly in Emotional Freedom, which is my new book, to present emotions as a path to spiritual awakening. And I believe that what he was saying was that his awareness opened up and that he was awakened, in a sense, by the experience that he went through. And he's viewing it that way. And he sounded like, you know, it was so much more beneficial for him than seeing it in any other way. I was brought up in a medical system where I was taught that schizophrenia was a psychotic disorder, period, and that it was symptomatic of hallucinations, paranoia, and so forth. And I think the situation for perception and, quote, mental disorders and every emotion we go through is so much more complex and nuanced than what traditional psychiatry has taught me in my training. And that's why I feel so passionate about presenting emotions in a different stance. I was trained at UCLA to have a biological cure for emotions. I.e. treating with medication for right. anxiety, for psychosis, for bipolar. And I think there's some good to that when it's used judiciously, not when it turns into a prescription mill and the patient doesn't even get psychotherapy or any talk therapy. But right. I do believe that there is such thing as a biochemical imbalance and that there's an enormous amount of suffering that goes along with it. You know, in Emotional Freedom, I have a chapter on depression. And, you know, as a psychiatrist, I've treated so many people with major depressions and lesser depressions. But depression is, I present it in the book as a path to spiritual awakening and a way to find light in darkness, which is such a powerful therapeutic healing tool. I know there was a caller who, you know, called in and said, well, what are some spiritual tools we can use? And it's number one, perception about how you look at what experiences you go through. And when someone is going through a depression, you know, for those who question it's a biochemical imbalance, You know, there is so much suffering that goes on that you can see a rose and not even know it's beautiful anymore. I mean, I as a psychiatrist and as an intuitive empath, I can feel what's going on, you know, deeply in other people. And I try to put myself in their shoes. And the suffering is undeniable in schizophrenia, in depression, and, you know, and what the suffering we go through on Earth. And so part of that, if it is due to a biochemical imbalance, it is compassion to treat it. You don't want to leave that untreated. And I don't believe you can generalize with everybody in terms of medication or no medication. As a psychiatrist and an intuitive, when a patient comes in my office, I sit down and I listen to what they're saying with my scientific mind, and I tune in with my intuition, and we come upon a solution based on what I'm sensing and knowing and sharing and what their needs are. And everyone is different. I mean, that's one thing I stress in emotional freedom, is that when patients come in, or whatever anyone is listening tonight, whatever you're going through, it can't be lumped into a category and explained just by that category. You know, emotions are a path to spiritual awakening, and each of us has a different thing. You know, some people have to deal with depression, others with anxiety, others with schizophrenia. But for me as a psychiatrist, you know, I see it all as about spiritual awakening. And I look at the Earth as being a place of light energy and dark energy, and it has enormous suffering here. And this is a place where our souls can grow so we can experience more joy and peace.
Okay. And I find that all very interesting and very valid, and I appreciate that, the voice that you have on that. And we'll talk more about your new book. But I have to say, I'm still kind of processing what I was, conversationally, what I was going through, partly as a shift from having prepared for the conversation with Will Elliott based on his book, which I didn't know he was going to come on and renounce. And I thought the conversation I was going to be having was with somebody who had understood life both from the side of schizophrenia and then now on the other side of that. And he says that what he has now is an understanding that there are reptilian shapeshifters that control our government and control every level of authority over us, that are part of an off-planet mind control and life control, that he is aware of it. Not that he has greater insight necessarily into himself. What he has is greater insight into what he thought he was experiencing as delusion turns out to be real.
Right.
And so I'm also a little bit worried that people might hear that and think, okay, well, I'm going off my meds.
And that's a good point.
And I'm a little bit worried that even though he said, go off your meds slowly, what you have, you've been the victim of psychiatry and the gatekeepers, you know, that they're telling you that your reality is wrong, when in fact your reality is right and everybody else is wrong. And I'm just trying to understand my role in that.
Right. Well, you know, I have tremendous respect for Will's experience and what it means to him in his life. But I think it's very important not to generalize that to everybody, because everybody has their own reality. You know, that's the fantastic thing about reality, is each person has their own perceptions and, you know, their own path in terms of their spiritual path. This was Will's path, and I totally respect that, you know, in terms of what his path is. But to generalize and tell everybody with, you know, the diagnosis of schizophrenia, whether you believe in it or not, to go off their meds would be irresponsible.
Well, and he didn't quite say it. He just said go off it slowly, and he said he recognized that some people might be schizophrenic, but he was doubtful about that as a diagnosis. And he was very harsh on psychiatry, in the sense that you all are the gatekeepers of reality, instead of being people that are helping to sort of get a life back or to see things in a different way, that you are, that psychiatrists in general are coercive and in cahoots with the controlling forces of the planet. In your experience, knowing that you take a different view of psychiatry and you work from your own position as an intuitive,
right?
Where do you fall on the idea, though, that psychiatrists are part of a greater conspiracy to control our minds?
Well, no, I believe in personal empowerment and listening to intuition and listening to the inner voices. And so to give away that power to anybody or anything, I don't care how dark an energy it is, I'm not an advocate of that, because I believe that through our own power of our hearts and our own power of our spirits, we can overcome anything. However, it is true that psychiatry, which started out as the, you know, the experience of the soul, you know, the psychiatrist is a doctor of the soul, it has turned in a lot to a prescription mill, and way too many medications are being prescribed without even listening to a person's experience. So it's about balance. It's not, I don't believe in polarizing, and I don't believe in generalizing. And I think there are good people who go into psychiatry who have truly want to help relieve suffering and truly want to be there for their patients. And there are others, you know, who are not as good. And so I think it's hard to find a good psychiatrist. I know, I agree with that. It is somebody who's really in sync with you, particularly if you're exploring other realms of reality, you know, that it's hard not to be diagnosed and labeled, you see. But there are wonderful people out there. I mean, since my first book, Second Sight, came out, I've been lecturing around the country to every kind of person possible. I've been going to churches and medical schools and hospitals, and there's been, at least in the U.S., a great awakening in terms of holistic medicine, in terms of awareness of other realities. And so, you know, I'm quite positive about it compared to when I did my training, you know, in 1983, you know, the word spiritual was never even brought up.
Sure.
So I do think we're progressing, but I also see what he was talking about, not in terms of the reptilian, because I can make no comment about that because I don't have any personal experience with that. But I do believe that we're overprescribing meds. And that, you know, when you look back on the Temple of Aesculapius, you know, in ancient Greece, someone would be ill. They'd come in and they'd go into a beautiful surroundings and dream, and then take that dream to a physician and begin to work on the inner workings of the soul and the spirit to begin to heal. I mean, that is so powerful. You know, I believe we have lost the art of that, the ancient art of connection, you know, of deep connection to a patient's spirit and our own spirit. I mean, whenever I treat patients, I always look at it as a holy, sacred partnership, and I try not to project anything of my own onto it and just try and hear what the patient needs. You know, it's very powerful. So in terms of the last conversation, I understand your point of view totally, and I know what you're saying, but I think the answer is in balance, not polarization. I never go and polarize. I always try and find what's right for the individual. And I honor his experience, and he was, it's really helped him, and I enjoyed hearing him very much. I enjoyed your dialogue, but I also know that the situation can be different for many other people.
One of those people that we've been thinking a lot about in the news is the accused shooter in the case of Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, and the testimony from the other people in Jared Loughner's life is that he started having experiences in his late teens, right around 20.
Right.
And that seems to be very consistent with, for example, with the experience before he renounced it of what Will Elliott had said, that he started at 20 when he was in law school and had to drop out because of the onset of these symptoms, as he originally described them. So what is it about that age? What is it about late teens, early 20s? What is it about guys and schizophrenia when it is a legitimate, I guess we should say, when the diagnosis is correct? Why that age? What happens at that age? Can I ask you?
Well, typically, you know, the schizophrenia, the traditional diagnosis of schizophrenia is late onset teens, early 20s, more prominent in men. And there's a biochemical shift that happens then that predisposes people to being symptomatic from what psychiatrists call schizophrenia, you know, that alteration in consciousness and the change in the biology. And typically schizophrenics hear auditory, quote, hallucinations and, you know, much less visual. And, you know, what Will said about the Hollywoodized version of schizophrenia is very true. Quote, schizophrenics, you know, don't usually have visual hallucinations or don't have visions. No, it's more negative voices in their minds. And I want to make this point, and I do mention this a lot in my work. There's a big difference between psychosis and psychic. You know, a huge difference. A psychotic, a paranoid, will feel that their food's poisoned, that the FBI is out to get them. They'll have horrible negative voices talking to them in their heads, saying horrible things. You're ugly. You're not good. You're not worthy. You know, that are totally tearing them apart inside. And they want to hurt themselves often. They want to hurt other people because the voices tell them this. You see, this is can be related to the biochemical imbalance, whereas psychic or intuitive, you know, my experience when I do a reading is that intuition comes through in a very neutral way, or else it's compassionate. It's simply information coming in. It's never beating yourself up or the negative voices, and never telling you to hurt yourself or another person. So psychosis and intuition are quite different. And when you have, you know, the young boys are, you know, blooming in, you know, into men becoming schizophrenic, at that point, I mean, education is so important, intervention is so important, options are important other than just medication. You know, I used to work as the head of the Spiritual Emergence Network in Los Angeles, where, you know, a lot of people would come to me and, you know, say, is my experience psychic or psychotic? And what I found, and certainly in my training at UCLA, I found that, you know, one can have a traditional psychotic experience. And I, you know, I say that in terms of the criteria, the fixed false perception of reality, the paranoia, the intense suffering that goes along with that. But in addition to that, they may have some psychic insights too. However, the way I work with that and what I always suggest in emotional freedom is you have to get balanced and grounded and be in this world first, then you could begin to work with the other stuff. Because if you don't, you get thrown way off. I mean, I have patients who get totally overwhelmed by intuitive input or dreams or insights. And you want to be balanced. You want to come from your heart. You want to be loving. You want to be clear. You want to be of service to other people. You don't want to have this beautiful gift of intuition mixed with incredible suffering and paranoia.
Right. But how do you tell then the difference between somebody who is authentically having a biochemical imbalance brought on by, you know, say, early adulthood and the changes in the body? How do you tell the difference between people who are schizophrenic and the quote-unquote schizophrenics, the people who are being misdiagnosed? Is that how? What's the yardstick by which we measure that?
Well, it's the level of suffering. If they want to hurt themselves or hurt another person, or if they hear these horrible negative voices, you know, that's the definition of traditional schizophrenia. And you want to relieve that suffering, and you want to get to the bottom of it however you can, as early as you can.
But if people, and thank you for that, but I mean, the people who feel, for example, like there's, you know, as Will was talking about, that there is this giant, this mega conspiracy that creates a false reality, and that voices are being beamed into, messages are being beamed into our brains, does that, wouldn't that be the traditional explanation of somebody who is going through, I mean, according to the traditional psychiatric definition, doesn't that fit?
Yeah, according to DSM-4, that absolutely fits. But let me tell you, the way I work with anybody who feels that they're being controlled by outside forces is always to help them with their empowerment. I mean, let's say it really is true that the reptilian forces are controlling everybody, all right? If that were true, then my challenge as a psychiatrist would be to help somebody contact their own power, their own inner power, so they couldn't be overcome by anyone. And you do that by tapping into your intuition, by dealing with the difficult, dark emotions inside so you can clear them, so you don't let anyone or anything control you. And I believe that we have that power. And my job as a psychiatrist is to empower people and not to say whether it's, you know, whether to the reptilians are true or not. That's not my concern. My concern is to empower them so they could deal with anything.
Very interesting. Well, I guess in a way, our theme then continues from Will Elliott, the trying to understand the difference between mental illness and mental awareness. And then I want to ask you, Dr. Judith Orloff, we'll get back to your new book, too, coming up, I promise. But I want to ask you what advice you would give to other people who are in the lives of somebody who is going through this change, much like the family then of this accused shooter in Arizona, coming up on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. On her website, Dr. Judith Orloff has all of her books plus downloadable products like quizzes and CDs and self-help awareness packages that you can download right there. It's very interesting. Go to coasttocoastam.com and you can click right on to Dr. Judith Orloff's website right from there. Lots to pick from, including the emotional repair kit. And the online course on combating emotional vampires. More on all of that coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. So if you go to Dr. Judith Orloff's website, you'll see she's got a new edition of her famous book, Second Sight, out. And also Emotional Freedom is there. And there are free video classes and free articles and quizzes there, too. To enjoy playing with tonight. You can link up again through coasttocoastam.com. Dr. Judith Orloff, let me ask you a question about something that we saw in the news as you see it, from your perspective. We saw in the case of this accused shooter in Arizona, a lot of this difficulty started to manifest itself in a classroom, probably not unlike perhaps one that you might teach, where he was totally disruptive and, according to the professor, threatening, felt very intimidated by him until they asked him to leave. And then the school kicked him out and said, you got to prove you're getting help before we allow you back in. And a family that seemed very sincere, parents who, at least in the conversations that have been relayed through family spokespeople and through their one statement, seemed to be very concerned about their son and the direction in which he was headed, and felt somewhat powerless in how they were dealing with him. How could they have done better? What could we all do when we see somebody that is experiencing this high level of agitation and paranoia to the point where they're arming themselves and thinking violent thoughts?
Well, to make more radical interventions, you know, to have the family and intervene. I mean, this person needs help immediately. I mean, but you can, when schizophrenia is coming on and you know your child, you'll be able to hear different things coming from them in terms of paranoia, in terms of violent thoughts. Whenever there's any mention of violence, there has to be an intervention right away. In terms of those parents, they were caring, but in terms of, you know, the courage, they had to intervene. It's very hard when you have a child that's going through this to have tough love, but you really need to. You have to make radical interventions to shift the violence and, you know, perhaps have inpatient hospitalization or do something to avert this path.
And so what could the school have done? What could the teacher have done? How could they have handled him differently that might have, other, you know, intervention, you say, but what are the words they use? How do they approach him in conversation? How can they offer that kind of the kind of approach that you talked about offering with your patients, where you are not invalidating their experience, but you're trying to work with them in the middle of it?
Well, you come as a team. You don't have separate people telling them separate things. You have to do an intervention as a gathering of people, but you do it with an intuitive awareness, but you do it with some firm limits. When you have a family member who's talking about violence, that's totally unacceptable. And you have to get in and intervene and avert that in whatever way you can, as a school system, as a parental system, but to come in, not to negate their experiences, but to say, this is the kind of help you have to get. And now, I mean, there are 72-hour holds that you can put on people, you know, on patients when they're violent, they want to hurt themselves, they want to hurt others, or are gravely disabled. So the legal system has a way to deal with that. And, you know, as radical as that is, and I had to do that throughout my training to put many people on 72-hour holds who are going to hurt themselves or hurt other people, it's extremely, you know, heart-wrenching to have to do that. But to avert a scene such as what happened in Arizona, one must do that.
Okay, well, let's say that the person hasn't said anything violent yet. They haven't talked about, maybe they're just talking about how they know that their voices are being beamed into their head, and or that they know that there is a conspiracy out there, and or whatever it is, however, they going back to the reptilian shapeshifters or whatever. What can one do then? What should one do short of conversations about violence to intervene or to help?
Well, again, to approach the person with education, with options, but this has been the huge issue with schizophrenia is if they're not going to hurt themselves, or hurt another person, or gravely disabled, there's no legal right to intervene. And if the person is an adult, you can't do anything, you know, other than do the interventions that you can, keep an eye out for violence. But in terms of the voices and the thinking, it's very hard to get somebody. I wrote about a patient of mine who went through the schizophrenic experience and came out the other end. And he, interestingly enough, used meditation. And he felt that meditation, the way he did it, helped him calm the voices in his head through mindfulness, awareness, through shifting out of the negative and focusing more on what was positive or what was neutral inside of himself. And then he went on to teach other people who are going through the experience of schizophrenia. And I'm using that as a term that is just a common term that we use as a reference. You know, I don't mean to pigeonhole people into a category, and I hope everybody understands that. But, you know, he used meditation to be able to shift out of the negative thoughts. You see, the way I work as a psychiatrist and an intuitive is that we need to empower people to change their thoughts. And when you fuel darkness, it will only grow. All right. When you put all your attention on darkness and negativity and psychic vampires and outside people doing this to me, and I'm going to focus all my attention in defense, that feeds the darkness on a level. So I believe in feeding what's best and most beautiful and positive and intuitive in the person. And so sometimes the skill of just cognitive behavioral shifting out of the negative thoughts into more positive thoughts and also being of service to be able to, you know, try and help others, you know, that is a very good intervention to make early on. You see it get like a pain cycle. When you have pain, you have to nip it in the bud before it gathers momentum. You know, if you see somebody who has so-called symptoms, you could begin to get loving, compassionate help, not people who are going to just do medications. That's not enough with anything. If you go through depression, you don't want to just be given medications. You want to get to the sole reason, you know, of why you're going through this. So you have to have a balanced approach, you know, of traditional, non-traditional, very loving, maybe clergy, maybe spiritual. You have to see what the mix is that the person would like. And then you bring in a bunch of people, you know, like a love team, you know, to help the person.
Well, and I resonate with that, and I want to get back actually to something you mentioned about emotional vampires in a moment. But can I say then, what do you say though to the person who says, "No, I'm right, you're wrong"?
You don't get into that argument with them. You never.
Well, but if you're saying there's a problem here, if you just say, you know what, I think there's a problem, and they go, "No, there's not. You don't get it. You're not aware of what the world is that's really happening. Here's what's really happening in the world," and you go, "Well, that how do you say, well, no, that's you know, obviously you're not going to say, no, that's crazy. I mean, but you're going to say what to when someone says that to you?
Well, you say, well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but let's have our focus here, you know, because usually people are suffering a lot and they don't want to suffer. You have to, you know, see, well, you know, apart from that, you have to refocus it on something more positive. You don't, the minute you confront somebody on a delusion, they're going to defend it.
Okay, good point. All right, so then how do we fight off emotional vampires? And I know your new book is about emotional freedom. And by the way, is your new book $99? Is that what I'm seeing on your website? New book is $99? What?
No, the $99 is the downloadable package where you get many videos and MP3s about positive energy and emotional freedom.
Okay. All right.
No. Emotional freedom is $9 on Amazon.
Okay. All right. I'm just looking at your website. I thought $170 value for only $99. That's a hell of a book right there.
No. It's actually just emotional freedom is newly out in paperback this week. And, you know, it would be helpful for people because it shows my system of framing emotions as a path to spiritual and intuitive awakening rather just as something to medicate or just as emotions torment you and there's no reason for it. I see a reason for everything that we go through, and my desire for everyone is to help them to become freer, to have more joy, to have more positivity, to have more love in their lives, and to free them from the negativity that binds you inside and to stop blaming everybody else and take responsibility for whatever is inside. We all have anxiety. We all have depression. We all have frustration. We all have anger. It's the nature of being human. And I just want to point this out in terms of compassion. You know, instead of pointing the finger and saying, this person over there did this, you know, I believe just by virtue of being human, our DNA, our genetics gives us all the potential to do anything. I mean, we have the potential to do good just as we have the potential to murder and harm people. And so just by virtue of being human, we have all that. But with emotional freedom, what I'm trying to say in my work and my book is that we have a choice about how we respond. And it's only through mindfulness that we choose not to fuel the darker angels of our nature, let's say, or the darker forces of our nature. We don't want to fuel that. And when we can honestly go in and begin to look at our fears, you know, maybe you had an abusive childhood. Maybe it wasn't fair. You know, maybe you had depression. Maybe you were traumatized. You know, this is the grist of our spiritual development. It's nothing to be ashamed of. And it's something, it's the tipping point of transformation. You have to deal with that. Now, I had a patient that once came to me and said, it was a panic attack, and said, oh, Judith, I wish I was coming to you with something more spiritual. And to me, panic attacks, that is the truth. That's the honest truth and the spiritual springboard from which to grow. It's only when we face these more difficult emotions can we be free. And that's what I want to help people do. And I work on myself in the same way, you know, in terms of my own emotions. I read through emotional freedom and I sometimes forget. So.
I do that all the time. I like hear something I said and I'm like, I said that?
Exactly.
But let me, I actually described your work to somebody not too long ago, and I was talking about psychic or emotional vampires, and I described it this way. I can't remember if this is accurate, though. So I said there are people who, in order for them to feel right about themselves, have to make you feel wrong about you.
Yes.
Would you say that's a fair way to sum it up?
Yes. I mean, that's one of the types of emotional vampires is the blamer or criticizer. No, but I want to just point out to everyone, when people act that way, that comes from insecurity. That is not an empowered person, someone who puts you down to lift them up.
Well, even if they're not putting you down, they drain your emotional energy by engaging you in these roundabout conversations, which are really focused on the fact that they're trying to process something. They may not feel good about themselves. They might be experiencing jealousy, or they might be experiencing insecurity about who they are. And so they take that out by messing around with your head and getting you to talk about them, and for you to try to question yourself somehow brings them greater peace. If they can bring you into their chaos, then they feel better about themselves. And that's a kind of emotional vampire. True?
Oh, most definitely. But you see, emotional vampires get their energy by throwing you off and getting you to be reactive and then sucking the energy right out of you. I mean, you could literally feel it when you're around an emotional vampire. It's like you're being sucked dry. It's like a little tendril attaches to you and sucks your energy right out. And there's symptoms of emotional vampire attack in emotional freedom. I have a whole quiz, have you been attacked by emotional vampire? And you literally feel like taking a nap. You know, all of a sudden, you could be in a perfectly fine mood and have lots of energy, and suddenly you feel like that energy is just being drained right out of you, so you feel woozy or sick or toxic, or suddenly you're angry or you know, you're irritated or you're not feeling well or you want to binge on carbs or comfort food, you know, to try and buffer the negative energy, you know, or you just feel, you know, terrible. And people question themselves. They think it's all in their head. You know, this is what they do. They're at a party and they meet an emotional vampire and suddenly they get all these symptoms. Then they question themselves and think, oh, I'm so neurotic, rather than trusting your intuition and saying, for whatever reason, this person is draining me, so they are not good for me. So for the moment, you know, it's good to get away from them, and then I can figure out why they're draining me and have strategies to deal with these vampires. Because in the chapter I wrote in Emotional Freedom on Emotional Vampires, I go through different types and strategies to deal with them. The point is, you don't want to give anyone power over you. So once you identify who the emotional vampires are in your life, then you can use some of these strategies to combat them. And it is very kind of a triumphant feeling when you can, you know, own the moment with the emotional vampires and they can't get you anymore. Now, you want to, you know, develop your own power in life. You want to empower yourself, not always be on the defensive or blaming other people. You want to look at these people as spiritual teachers, as dark teachers, as challenges to help you to grow strong, because everyone is listening. You want to grow strong. Now, you want to develop what's best and brightest and most powerful in yourself, but you have to practice. You have to practice. I was at dinner with an emotional vampire not long ago, and I'm sitting there. Somebody I just met for the first time, I'm sitting there. My energy is just getting totally drained by this woman. And so I'm sitting, you know, in my own mind thinking to myself, all right, what type of emotional vampire is she, and what kind of strategies can I use to combat her so she can't get me? I don't want to be gotten. I don't want to give her any of my own energy. So I was able to practice setting very clear limits and boundaries and not going for the bait when she, you know, prodded, you know, some of my insecurities and was pushing and prodding. And I just didn't go for it. And then she got disinterested in me, which was just fine.
Yeah, you held up the equivalent of a string of garlic or something.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, but the thing is, for everyone listening, you have to practice. You have to get the hang of it. And when you encounter an emotional vampire, don't panic, you know, and don't, you know, go into a, you know, a negative thought pattern, but just think, all right, let me practice some of these techniques, even putting a shield of light around you. A visualization is a powerful technique with emotional vampires, where if you're around one, you can visualize a shield of white light about 5 inches from your body and visualize it covering your entire body so that negative energy can't get in. And this really deflects it. You could be at a dinner table with an emotional vampire and practice the shielding technique, you know, or even in airports. I'm what's called an emotional empath. I'm an emotional sponge. I absorb energy. I take it on in my body, and so I have to be very protective of my energy. So I'll be at an airport, and someone will sit down next to me. I don't know who this person is, but all I know is I feel the energy is being sucked from me, you know, by this person. I'll just very quietly get up and move, because I don't want to sit there for an hour until the plane comes sitting next to this person. And it's totally an intuitive perception, but I've come to trust it over the years. So I feel fine doing that. You know, I don't do it with an attitude. You know, I just move, you know, to take care of myself. So, you know, we have to do that. But I want everyone to really trust your intuition. If you feel someone's draining you, probably they are.
Well, and we'll get to your questions for Dr. Judith Orloff coming up sometime next hour on Coast to Coast, I promise. But when we pick this up then here in just a moment, I want to go through one of your quizzes that you put on the website. I was taking some of those questions and answers before we went on the air. So I just wanted to ask you a little bit more about it again. The new book is out in paperback, but you can go online at coasttocoastam.com and link up to Dr. Judith Orloff and take a look at what she gives you, including the new online course on combating emotional vampires. I want to get to the difference between psychic vampirism and emotional vampirism. That's a proposal I'll make for you coming up next hour on Coast to Coast. And if you missed the first couple of hours with Will Elliott and his experiences renouncing his diagnosis as schizophrenic and how he sees the world now. You go back and either sign up for Coast Insider online or just try and find the replay coming up. I think you'll find it very interesting. Find out more. Coasttocoastam.com has everything you need to know about Coast Insider. This is Coast to Coast. My name is Ian Punnett.